Hello, this is Barry Took, with a warm seasonal welcome to an eclectic selection from the News Quiz of 1995. A team of dedicated researchers spent weeks sifting through all the news items we covered this year, seeking out every great moment of national and international importance so that we could throw them in the bin and have a listen to the silly bits. I hope you enjoy them. Tony, your question now. Who wanted to shoot today's messenger?
Oh, well, I suppose this would be about Jonathan Aitken wanting to have a go at John Humphreys, accusing the BBC once again of being biased or partisan or what have you. And he actually described it as being the BBC being the Blair Broadcasting Association. Presumably by this he meant that it's got programmes, but no one knows what they are yet. And he didn't like the way John Humphrey kept saying yes, but all the time in the interview. Presumably he wanted him to be more polite and just say yes, thank you.
This is about senior Tory minister Jonathan Aitken, who accused the BBC of anti-government bias. He claimed John Humphreys of the Today programme interrupted Kenneth Clark 32 times in 10 minutes, but in fact Mr Humphreys only ever interjects when absolutely necessary. Excuse me, hello? Yes, John, I've got that, yes. Apparently it was only 31 times. In a counter-move to these accusations, BBC's Panorama is giving the Prime Minister a full 1 hour to himself to explain all his latest thinking, although there will be 59 minutes of intermission. Alan, will you have a listen to this? Was another one Bites the Dust by the Queen. By Queen. Your question, Alan, is this. Who went doing the right thing to be replaced from the left, right and centre?
Thought we were having easy questions. I hoped it was because it was Freddie Mercury. This was going to be one about Freddie Starr. There were such wonderful names in the papers this week, weren't there? Like Little Child running electricity. Yes. And Cotshead being the gay gardener of... Freddie Starr, and I thought the Freddie Mercury must tie that in. This is Robert Hughes, not to be confused with the Great Eastheat. This is a chap whose wife is standing by him. Or behind him. Because Mr. Hughes has been in a leg-over crisis and is finally deciding very late to spend more time with his family. They always decide it afterwards, don't they? Then he's the Minister for the People's Charter, which is where people have the right to a bit of everything that's going. And Mr. Hughes took that for himself. And he has been replaced by a man who was formerly a member of the Labour government, which just shows how deeply a barrel has to be scraped by Mr. Major.
He's amusingly called Mr. Horam. And the mistress is Miss Oates, would you believe it?
I was coming to Miss Oates, as indeed Mr. Hughes.
Started early this series.
Unfortunately, Ian got in there first.
What was interesting about Mr. Hughes is that rather than wait for somebody to expose him in the newspapers, he exposed himself. Very curious. He was sort of own exclusive.
I was rather shocked. I mean, it was a man doing the decent thing. He obviously had no future as a minister at all.
This is Tory Minister Robert Hughes, who resigned after admitting he'd had an affair that ended last year, and some of the papers were asking why he waited until now. Actually, he wanted to go 6 months ago, but his name only just came to the top of the waiting list. Here's an item from the Birmingham Post.
One of the mistresses of disgraced TSB boss Graham Doughty says the bank will have difficulty in recovering some of the cash he stole because she invested it in £5,000 worth of breast implants. Last night, a spokesman for the TSB said, "These things are in the hands of our solicitors."
Jane, which speaker wasn't a stick in the mud?
This is a very peculiar story, isn't it? And I don't think I quite believe it. It's about Betty Boothroyd, isn't it?
It is indeed.
I think it's Labour's attempt to kind of counter the Jonathan Aitken Arab connection. We've now got Betty Boothroyd going to Marrakesh on the hippie trail. Don't ask me why, but the most bizarre thing about it is her car got caught in a landslide and she was dug out and rescued by the Moroccan police force. And they said, we know exactly who you are because we recognise you from World Service Television. But what is the Moroccan police force doing watching Today in Parliament on World Service Television? It just doesn't ring true to me.
Everyone seems to think she was terrifically heroic and was amazed by her fortitude, you know, walking through mud and slime for all these hours, which, given that she has to chair Prime Minister's questions twice this week, you'd think would be a doddle. But everyone thinks she's been very brave, as I'm sure she has.
But also, she is a Labour member, isn't she? And she wasn't expecting to get caught in a landslide for another 2 years. So.
Ian, your turn for a question. Who's exclusively taking the Michael through the European Court?
Who's taking the Michael through the European Court?
Well, I could do it in another accent if you'd like.
What, Pakistani?
Yes.
Yes, this is Gerry Adams.
Of course it is.
I used to do a very good impression of him.
Go on, then.
This is Gerry Adams, obviously, who's taking the British government to the European Court of Human Rights for excluding him on the grounds that he might have been a terrorist. And knowing the European Court of Human Rights, they'll find for him. They found for Ernest Saunders, didn't they?
Did they?
What good precedent.
Did they find for Saunders?
Yes, they did. They found he had been to Ford Open Prison, which is now sort of twinned with Lourdes.
This question does refer to the Sinn Féin President Gerry Adams, who is seeking damages from the government through the European Court for excluding him from mainland Britain. At the same time, President Clinton hinted he's planning to invite Gerry Adams to a St. Patrick's Day party at the White House, despite the possible damage to his credibility. But Gerry says he thinks he can handle it. Start with a cutting from the Careers Organisation bulletin read by Charlotte Green.
Wanted, man to work on nuclear-fissionable isotope molecular reactive counters and three-phase cyclotronic uranium photosynthesizers. No experience necessary.
Thank you, the Reverend Keith W. Munday of Northamptonshire, to send you there. Tony.
Well, I like the sign that's backstage here at the Babbicombe Theatre in the toilet. It actually says, please remember not to flush this toilet during the performance. We haven't heard it go off yet, have we? I've got a clip as well, which is from the Leicester Mercury. It says, bargain footwear for all the family. Full-length boots, now £5. Ankle boots from £9.99. Ladies' shoes, buy one, get one free.
Alan.
The producer wants me to do this one. Because the Chippenham Deanery Synod News fell on his mat this morning. And it says, item 3, Diocesan Synod Report. Owing to the difficulty of finding any member of the Diocesan Synod who had any recollection of what had taken place at the last meeting, there was no report.
Vincent.
Well, in keeping with the style and tradition of the programme tonight, my piece comes from a German newspaper in Bremen via The Big Issue, which concerns the fearful fate of Herr Gunther Burpus. Herr Burpus, aged 41, mislaid the keys to his house and attempted to crawl in through the cat flap. Unfortunately, he got stuck halfway and couldn't get out again. A passing group of students then spotted him and decided to take advantage of the poor man. So they removed his trousers, as you do, painted his buttocks bright blue and stuck a daffodil in his bum and erected a sign saying, Germany resurgent, an essay in street art, please give generously. Passers-by were assured that Herr Burpus's screams were all part of the act, and he remained stuck there for 2 days. He was only freed when an old woman called the police. I kept shouting for help, said Herr Burpus, but people kept saying, very good, very clever, and throwing coins at me.
Vincent.
Vincent Hanna there with one of the year's most memorable and bizarre cuttings. As usual, our European partners got their fair share of news quiz irony, although most of the stories seem to date from 1945. Gillian, here's a piece of music for you.
Looking through the window, you can see a distant steeple, not a sign of people.
Who wants people?
Sleep well, we'll thank the small hotel together.
Well, that was, of course, Small Hotel, but for a bonus, can you tell me who was singing?
It was Ginger, wasn't it?
No, it's Pearlcar and Lyndon Johnson.
Lyndon Johnson, you silly idiot.
Wasn't it Ginger Rogers?
No, it wasn't. No. It was B.B. Daniels and Ben Wilson.
Oh, of course it was, yes.
And your question is, who planned a welcome for the other side at the seaside?
This is his dear Dottie O'Grady, a seaside landlady in the Isle of Wight. Now, the great question of the age is, was she a German spy? Or was she just, we're not allowed to say this word on the BBC anymore because it's politically incorrect, but I'll say it anyway, a loony.
She was a seaside landlady. They're all Nazis. I didn't know anybody was surprised at this.
And this dear old duck, you know, used to sit down by the waves waiting for the Nazis to roll in.
All right. It's all about Dorothy O'Grady, the Isle of Wight landlady, who apparently spied for Germany from her Sandown guest house. Mrs. O'Grady played the part of an eccentric rather than a spy. When arrested by soldiers in 1940, she said, "I suppose they got the idea I was a spy because I was wearing a little swastika flag on my coat." We don't know what the training courses the Germans sent her on, but camouflage obviously wasn't one of them. The authorities found her hotel full of detailed plans of beach defences of the Isle of Wight, together with a booking on the car ferry to Portsmouth for a party of 27 Panzer divisions. They also intercepted a Morse code message telling the Germans only to invade between 7 and 8 if they wanted a hot bath. Alan.
I, by coincidence, have a gardening piece as well, but it's topical. Well, I mean, it would be 50 years ago. It's from the Bournemouth Evening Echo. He says, Mrs. Irene Graham of Thorpe Avenue, Boscombe, delighted the audience with her reminiscence of the German prisoner of war who was sent each week to do her garden. He was repatriated at the end of 1945, she recalled. He had always seemed a nice, friendly chap. But when the crocuses came up in the middle of our lawn in February 1946, they spelt out Heil Hitler.
Jeremy, here's your question. Who may be overpaid and oversexed but won't be over here?
The Yanks, those damn Yanks who take our women away with nylons and chewing gum. Whether together or separately, I don't know. But, no, this is the long-running Clinton major no-no-no-no-no politics, which started when the Tories supported Bush and then Labour supported Clinton. And then after Clinton got in, Labour went over to learn from the Democrats how to win elections and only succeeded in teaching the Democrats how to lose elections. And this has gone on with the Adams thing and Major not taking Clinton's calls, which is quite a big thing for Major because he doesn't get many calls. So to turn one down is a principled stand. And Clinton doesn't want to come to London for VE Day. He's going to go to Moscow, where there's a lot more burger bars and you don't have to listen to 4.5 hours of Vera Lynn.
The question is, Alan, who saw a red flag instead of tanks for the memory?
I fear this is our own John Major and every other head of state who went to Russia to see them celebrate peace, love, and all the other bogus things we were supposed to be celebrating when we really wanted to say how we trashed the Bosch. but we couldn't say that because Cole was over here eating his two dinners at the Guildhall when we came over. And we didn't want to spoil the fat Hun's appetite. But they order these things differently in Russia. So they got out the biggest wartime parade they had in 30 years just to show Cole, if he did it again, what would happen to him again. And our mimsy buggers wouldn't turn up because they said, this is really rather awful, let us go and see Doves.
and stuff like that, and let us pledge ourselves to a new Europe full of peace, and all that stuff. Meanwhile, the Russians were getting into their tanks and flying their aircraft over and priming their bombs. Good on them, I say.
But the great draft dodger went, didn't he? I mean, there is a sort of curious paradox of all these characters saluting the one guy who's done everything to avoid going into the US Army.
Well, they wouldn't have him in the Russian Army either, I suppose.
What I like about that, since you've raised the issue of Forrest Clinton, I was watching the news tonight. And did you see that the Russians had arranged to give them a present, which was a brass statue of Bill and Hillary? But he is not allowed to accept expensive gifts over a certain value, and this went over it, so they chipped out Hillary.
I said at the beginning of the programme that we'd be listening to a lot of silly stuff from 1995. Well, the stories weren't all just silly. Some of them were seriously silly. In fact, it makes you wonder why people spread this stuff about.
With a bit of a mind flip, you're into the time slip. And nothing can ever be the same. You're spaced out on sensation. Like you're under sedation.
The Rocky Horror Show, Time Warp. And the question is, how might we come back to this question in the future?
Well, any way you like. I'm answering it now. I think this is a question about Stephen Hawking.
Right.
Because he's actually giving some credence now to a theory that he previously ridiculed, time travel. But he now reckons that if you kind of combine, Einstein's general theory of relativity with quantum theory, that you can actually travel in time. And I've actually believed this for years, ever since I was born, 3,000 years ago, to a family of cave-dwelling hunters just outside Stonehenge. And it is a possibility, I suppose. In a sense, in a small, infinitesimal way, we all travel in time a little bit every time we put the clocks back, don't we?
What?
Solid grasp of Einstein.
Yeah, I think so. But I think what he's referring to is greater time travel, like the sort of things that Doctor Who used to do, or they did in Back to the Future. I've always thought that since Back to the Future is actually a film about time travel, I always thought that Back to the Future 3 should have been released first.
I'm trying to grasp this.
Yeah.
We haven't discovered it yet, how to travel in time. But when in the future they discover how to travel in time, they will be here. Now, how do we know they're not here now?
Well, I am.
No, you were 3,000 years ago.
Well,
how do I know you're not from...
Well, I dotted around a few times, haven't I? I don't just do it once. This is my holiday at the moment.
Well, it's a pity. I mean, were you from the future, you'd be able to tell me things like, you know, how much fags are going to go up and whether Blair will get in.
It's very bad news for the National Lottery, isn't it? Well, I think we should look at it really positively, because I think it'd be fantastic to be able to, because I'm sure we'd all pick, you know, moments where you could go back and you could stop the bullet that started the First World War. You could go back, you could, you know, to the 1920s in Grantham and lower and find a way of lowering Councillor Thatcher's sperm count. I mean, it would be amazing human potential.
Although it isn't quite possible yet to go back, a system has been discovered that makes time stand still. It's called Good Morning with Anne and Nick. We start round two with an apology in the Borneo Bulletin.
In yesterday's report about restriction on import of chicken, the name of the permanent secretary at the Ministry of Industry and Primary Resources should have read Dato Paduka Awang Haji Ahmad Bin Pehin Orang Kaya Digadong Seri Diraja Dato Laila Utama Haji Awang Mod Yusuf. The error is regretted.
Well done, Ryan. And thank you, Phil Spires of Brunei, for that.
Jeremy. Yes.
Whose love life was a load of rubbish?
Oh, this is Pervman, isn't it?
There's a perv man, and he used to be into paving slabs at
That's
one
right.
time,
yes.
Which gives a new slant to curb crawling. yes. Found a crack in the pavement and was away. And, or was it a manhole? Here, no.
Oh, yeah.
Now he's gotten keen on bin liners. He has sex with bin liners, but I'm not clear on this, whether he has, I mean, sex in the sense of they are his partners, or sex in the sense of sex with the bin liner as in sex with the condom. You know, using it as a protective device if you're having sex with the pavement.
I get your point.
Well, of course, when I was a teenager, sex with a condom did mean sex with a condom. Nobody else was involved. But no, he has sex with people's rubbish, and that's why when you pull the bag up, it all falls out the bottom, because this man's been round your bins.
It is the bin liner. The bin liner is his significant other, isn't it? It is actually... That is how it works, I believe.
I wondered if he'd seen the female condom and misunderstood the idea.
This is about Carl Watkins, who was prosecuted for making love to dustbin bags left outside the collection.
Love?
What? You call that love?
Sorry, did you say love?
Well, I have...
I mean, is this dustbin bag always there for him, or what? What? Is that what you've got written down there?
It's just bin it, bag it, and forget it for him.
I can't sit here discussing the rights or wrongs of a man having it off with a dustbin bag, can I? The whole thing's ludicrous. This is all about Carl Watkins, who was prosecuted for having it off with a dustbin bag. Watkins also tried to get inside a wheelie bin and developed a crush on a dust cart. He was picked up at his house early on Thursday morning, but police dropped him halfway down the garden path. Oh, dear. We start round three with an item from the Sunday Express.
10 people were injured when fighting erupted at an anger management seminar in Madrid. Police said it was triggered when the participants, psychiatrists and their patients, discussed which methods were most effective in helping keep their tempers.
Ian, how have one's chips gone to the dogs?
Royal family,
Yes.
One's chips.
The Queen?
Queen.
We've had that record. Where are we?
Cocker Spaniels.
Cocker Spaniels eating
British
chips.
Council,
very big story, I saw it.
Any more clues?
No, just answer it.
All right. It's the Queen's Cocker Spaniels, which have been given barcodes. This is true. Two of her Cocker Spaniels have had silicon chips implanted in them so that when they run off, you just get out your scanner and they come beaming back somehow. But the really striking thing about them is that they're called Oxo and Bisto, these royal dogs, which struck me as a bit down market, really, for the richest woman in the land. So.
Yeah, and
all her dogs Oxo, but you know, they've probably got other ones called Pot Noodle.
What do you do? Just like a television remote control? You just press it and the dog blows up and
it's not a barcode. What? I mean, it would be a bugger going through Waitrose. Take your spaniel and it costs you £437.3.
Six dogs or less.
You imagine the girl... Imagine the girl holding the dog up by the scruff of the neck. How much a spaniel, Doreen?
Here's an item spotted in the Daily Telegraph.
TV sports pundit Joe Theismann, commenting on the retirement of San Francisco quarterback Joe Montana, said, "We should be careful about using the word genius to describe a football player. A genius is a guy like Norman Einstein."
Thank you, Anne Curran of Hertfordshire, for that. Vincent, your question now. Whose busty assets should be barbecue?
Yes.
Lucky fellow.
Well, it's... I wanted this one so much. This is Barbie, who is a threat to the stability of Iran. A fatwa has been slapped on Barbie. The sight of blonde bimbos in expensive clothes with dyed hair is enough to destroy the culture of that great country. The chief fatwa imposer said, "Our children must be protected from this evil Western style of living in the shaping of the body, the voluptuous fullness of the lips, and the blonde styling of the hair. So, no more trips there for Michael Heseltine.
Absolutely right. But a new Barbie doll that takes account of Middle Eastern sensibilities is being produced. It's covered from head to foot, wears a yashmak, and for added realism, the hands are removable. Now,
you walking home alone in the dark afterwards.
Before we go, I must make a point of thanking the many thousands, yes, thousands of you, who sent in cuttings. It was good to be able to share your sense of humour. More, please, in 1996. Well, that's just about it for the first half of 1995, but in the next programme, we'll be taking a look at the rest of the year, and I hope you'll find time to join us. Meanwhile, I leave you, as is traditional on the News Quiz, with some cuttings from our panellists.
Francis, have you brought a cutting for
us? Yes, it's from the Churchdown Parish magazine.
Yes.
Would the congregation please note that the bowl at the back of the church labelled For the Sick is for... is for monetary donations only.
Andy, have you brought a cutting for us?
I'm indebted to Mr. Kane Newman of Stevenage, who sends me this. A Milton Keynes coven of white witches this week won its battle with the council to use derelict land for its ceremonies. High Priest Martin Propp told The Guardian rituals included lighting a fire with spiritual significance and also enabling witches to cook jacket potatoes.
Clive, have you got something for us?
Yes, this is from the Advertiser, sent by somebody called H.J. Yates. I don't think I understand it, actually, but a man indecently exposed himself to a Cranley woman in St. Nicholas Churchyard on Saturday evening. Police say he appeared from behind some bushes as the woman walked by. The man is described as of slim build, wearing grey or faded black jeans, and is believed to be left-handed.
There's no answer to that, really.
Andrew.
This is a clipping from The Guardian. After being charged £20 for a £10 overdraft, 30-year-old Michael Howard of Leeds changed his name by deed poll to Yorkshire Bank PLC, Our Fascist Bastards. The bank has now asked him to close his account, and Mr. Bastards has asked them to repay the 69p balance by cheque made out in his new name.
Alan.
Oh, by an amazing coincidence, I have got a new name one too.
Good heavens, Alan.
It's one from the Salisbury Chronicle. What should have been a happy family occasion was marred by a scuffle which broke out last Sunday at the font of Hampton Courtney Parish Church, when 84-year-old Barry Wicks intervened in the christening of his great-grandson. Attempting to snatch the baby from the Reverend James Donoghue, Mr. Wicks shouted that he'd not spent 6 years fighting a war for this sort of thing to happen. He was restrained and led from the church by relatives. The ceremony continued, and the baby was duly christened Adolf.
From us all, have a happy Christmas and a peaceful new year.
Part one of the News Quiz of the Year was presented by your chairman, Barry Took. Taking part were Alan Corran, Francis Wheen, Andy Hamilton, Ian Hislop, Clive Anderson, Tony Hawkes, Jane Finn, Steve Punt, Vincent Hanna, Gillian Reynolds, Rupert Allison MP, Andrew Rawnsley, and Jeremy Hardy. The cuttings were read by Charlotte Green, Brian Perkins, and me, Peter Donaldson. The programme was researched and the links written by Ian Pattinson. The producer was Alan Evans.